Independent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this April the 28th on the West Coast, now April the 29th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to welcome all those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, as well as on BlogTalkRadio.com, whether you're listening live or on a rebroadcast of the show. Of course, you can't rebroadcast it until we've done it, so that may be tomorrow sometime. Well, we've got some good news for you. Finally, the article I've been talking about for the past several months is posted on my website. Go to directlightproductions.com and click on articles, and then click on Teenage Mutant Ninja Birth Certificates. I hope you wake up to what has happened here in the United States many, many years ago, and it has everything to do with what's going on. I've said that on many shows. I'll continue to say that even tonight. We're going to talk about that that topic with tonight's guest. I must tell you that I announced and had scheduled for the whole month Dr. B. Sirius, who was going to come on and talk about parasites. I guess we're going to talk about parasites of a different kind tonight. However, we want to wish him and his wife and his family our best wishes. His wife had a, I almost said baby girl. I haven't even intuited what, but he has a baby in the family, a new member of his family, and we want to wish them well and, of course, continued health and success and prosperity and spiritual abundance, which those of you who know Dr. B and have heard him on this show know what a firecracker of information he is. He's a very passionate man. He cares about all of us, and we want to wish him well. He couldn't make it tonight, and I can understand that, but we'll have him on again in May to make up not just for missing tonight's show, but also to give him an opportunity to present a lot of wonderful information that he likes to share. Just to lighten things up a little bit more than that, I have a piece. It's actually an audio file that I've had for some time. Someone sent this to me, or I found it by accident. I'm not really sure which, so I don't know who to credit for how I got a hold of this, but this is a young girl in Ireland who was making prank phone calls, and she made a call to a company in her country, and this was, of course, recorded, and that's what you're going to hear. She's thinking outside the box, and I give her credit for that. She's voicing displeasure about the school she attends, and she calls a demolition company. And I'm going to play this for you. And it's loading right now, so give it a moment here. It's coming.
Maybe I'll consider her my protege. Yes. This is a girl in Ireland who's making prank calls at the age of 8.
Oh, love it.
We will endeavour to bring you a few of these. But this is one about she doesn't like her school, and she wants to get it demolished. So she goes to a demolition expert and tries to convince them.
Hello, Intercore.
Hi, is that the demolition place?
It is, yeah.
Could you help me to destroy my school, please?
Just bear with me a second. Hello.
Hi.
What school do you go to?
I go to a school in Dublin.
And you want it demolished?
Yeah. Do you use a big wrecking ball, or
we
how
have
do you knock it down?
A big ball.
Right.
Well, hold on 1 second, please.
Hello?
How are you? My name's Becky.
Yes.
I have a proposal for you.
Go ahead.
Are you the demolition man?
Yes.
You're the top boss, yeah?
Go ahead. What's the crack? Hello?
I want you to help me destroy my school.
You want it blown up?
Can you blow it up or knock it down?
Whatever you want done.
I'll blow it up, that would be better. Can you make sure that all my teachers are in there when you knock it down?
I don't know if I get away with that now.
I will, nobody likes them. They give me extra homework on a Friday and everything.
Where are you calling from?
From Dublin.
What school in Dublin?
The one that's about to fall down.
There's a lot of schools in Dublin about to fall down.
And how much would it cost to knock it to the ground?
It depends how big it is.
Give me a ballpark finger. Finger.
He's not there. Give me a ballpark finger. Oh, Jesus.
Is this a demolition company or a joke factory?
It's a joke factory at the minute, hey. The joke factory.
Listen, are you going to come and knock my school down or what?
I will, Shirley. Can you fax me through a photograph or a site plan or something?
Right, I'll fax you through a plan of the school and my teacher's names.
Yeah, no problem, yeah.
And you just make sure that they're all in the building when you knock it down.
You put all their names on it. I give you a price for each individual teacher.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
When the school falls down, will it make a crash or a wallop?
Say hey in Belfast and make a big bang.
Sounds good. Oh, listen, I'll talk to you later, top man.
Fine, good luck, hey. You look after yourself.
Feel your boots, man.
Hey, good luck.
See you after.
Feel your boots, man.
I love that they give you a ballpark figure. She's got a big future ahead of her. Big she.
Definitely. Look at the...
Well, that's 8-year-old Becky in Ireland. I guess even the kids in Ireland don't like the education they're getting. Sounds like a brilliant young lady. Now, certainly we don't condone knocking the school down for the sake of getting rid of the teachers, but I find it quite interesting that a young girl, age 8, in Ireland could be so creative and actually orchestrate this little ruse on professionals. It's a lesson for all of us to really pay attention. Well, that said, we have a surprise guest with us tonight. He was kind enough at the last moment to fill in for Dr. B, and he has his own website. Many of you already know him. He's been on this show, I would think, maybe several hundred times now over the past couple of years. His website is a research site that is one of the most popular websites in the whole world, educate-yourself.org, and he is a metaphysical scientist, researcher, author, journalist, and our good friend, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Hi, Don. Thank you very much for having me on tonight.
Sounds like a cute little girl.
Oh, it was lovely. I was just... magnificent. I mean, just so much fun. Boy, would that make my day if I was in that business and got that call. I mean, oh my God, that was just delightful beyond words.
Yes, well, we're heard in Ireland. I presume they must have heard this at one point somewhere in Ireland. Concept of that, and
yeah, exactly. And a girl, particularly of such a tender age, to go about it so methodically and matter of factly, and you know, she didn't like they were laughing. You know, it kind of annoyed her. Is this a joke factory or a demolition shop? Are you the top man? I mean, geez,
well.
Becky's gonna. It's going to definitely be in management, you can be sure of that.
Yeah. Right. Well, the topic we decided we were going to discuss tonight, and we don't often even determine what we're going to discuss. We sort of just wing it, and in a sense, we're going to wing it. We're going to discuss what's happening today, and in my research into this newspaper article that came out in 1952 in Denison. Actually, it was Sherman, Texas, where it came out. It was written by the Sherman Herald, we've learned. This story about Dwight David Eisenhower not having a birth certificate, and this being arranged for him by a man named Lonnie Roberts. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, I've finally gotten around to publishing this thing. It's about 5 months worth of research, actually. And you've had a chance to read a portion of it. You're somewhat familiar with the story anyway.
Yes.
And despite the fact that I've been talking about this somewhat in the prior articles that I've written in regard to the general story and the fact that Eisenhower had run for the presidency in 1952, and it seemed like as soon as the campaign got started, he was just plodding along and not really concerned. And it was alleged that a New York law firm that remains unnamed inquired as to whether or not there was a birth certificate in Denison. Now, that could very well have been his own law firm or people who were concerned about the eligibility so that he would qualify, not so much that someone had discovered that there was no birth certificate. Because I truly have concluded, after all this research that I've done over the last 6-7 months, actually, that had anyone known that there was no birth certificate, that it would have created quite a ruckus. And so it was likely a law firm that was working on his behalf that had just inquired. And we're presuming that that story may have come out because someone had gotten wind that this birth certificate was being created. So I came out with the first story talking about the general article, and I took some criticism. People said, oh, I manufactured this newspaper article, and my charges were baseless, and, you know, the usual attempt to put up a smoke screen and cover this topic up so that no one would pay attention to it. Then I came out with a two-part article called Teenage Mutant Ninja Eisenhowers, and I revealed some finds in my research that Eisenhower had claimed he was born in Tyler, Texas.
Right.
And I studied his genealogy and deduced that he was from Sokol, Bukovina, Austria-Hungary. And it's pretty convincing information there. After having done that, sometime later, I came into some documents. And these documents are featured in the article, showing that there was a plot to do this. And the way it was done is quite unlawful, I've determined. Now, on the basis of what you know, I'd like to get some of your comments about this.
Well, allow me to just to step back for the new listener and just state the story much more broadly. As a result of a newspaper article that you just found out about, that was published, I guess, in September of 1952, which was kind of one of these friendly little short items in a local Denison, Texas newspaper that has a person who's claiming to be an Army private by the name of Lonnie Roberts, is going to assist or help then presidential candidate Dwight Eisenhower firmly establish that he has a birth certificate that he was born in Denison. So that's how the scene opens. However, as you dug, you began to realize that first the oddity of all this, every genuine person born in this country has a birth certificate. And, you know, 99.9% of the cases, I'm sure, in a hospital, most people are born in a hospital. So there's a birth certificate. You would think if you're running for the highest office in the land, having an established location where your birth certificate, you know, what they do with a birth certificate, whatever town you're born in, it's registered at city hall or town hall. Every time there's a birth, every single day, it's registered. It's registered with the state. It's registered with the city. It's in the files of the hospital or the doctor who delivered the babies. There are multiple official locations where your birth certificate, where your birth is noted. And above all, city hall, you know, if you go into any town hall, they have birth and death records. So people who are born in that town are listed there. So that applies to most of us who are actually born here. We have an official record, and you'd never expect in the course of a presidential election that something like that would come up. It seems so elementary. So just that sort of article appearing in itself is a little bit strange. It seems that there was this unnamed New York law firm that in the course of the, prior to the election, they wanted to verify that he had a birth certificate for Denison. Apparently they probed, and there was none there. So they wanted to look into this, I suppose. And it could have been, as you suggested, a set-up deal in which it's a law firm friendly to Eisenhower that was essentially creating the pretext for, quote, you know, confirming the birth certificate. And or it could have been a legit outfit. Maybe it was on the other side of the aisle, who knows, who just wanted to check, cross-check to just to be sure. And came up zero, so perhaps, you know, it was all bona fide. In any event, this strange deal comes up in which they need to verify, you know, that he was born there. So then you have the actual contents of this letter being sent to Mamie Eisenhower from a fellow who's calling himself Lonnie Roberts. I don't, would you like, let's see, did I state the story broadly enough? What we're establishing here is that Dwight Eisenhower, the five-star Allied Commander-in-Chief of World War II, was not born in America, as the current usurper to the presidency was not born in America. And this is the third individual that you had looked into who was a president of the United States and was not born in America, George Bush Sr. being the third one. He was born in Germany.
Actually, fourth individual.
Oh, fourth.
and there's a fifth waiting in the wings, too.
Oh, yes. Okay, but let's say written stories, you know, currently published stories. You're up to three individuals who were president of the United States who were not born here. So that's the crux of the story, that this is important information. Why? Because the elite groups that we talk about manipulating our lives, our even the establishment of this country, are essentially gaming all of us, all the legitimate citizens who think the government and the country and the whole nation, it's all on the level, it's above board, it's orderly, we have legitimate native-born Americans who are, you know, rise up through the ranks and through fame or fortune or luck or whatever, get to become presidents, you know, candidates for president of the United States, and we have these fair and honest elections in which the people express their... Nothing of the sort is happening. We have elites grooming individuals from birth forward to function as our members of our Congress, Senate, House of Representatives, well, at least the Senate in most cases, and especially the presidents and presidential cabinet members, et cetera, et cetera. we're finding out more and more that these people are not Native Americans. And so that's the shocker, and that Eisenhower has this long-standing reputation of being, you know, kind of a steady, all-American football-type guy, and, you know, Allied commander World War II, and he was the commander of the ship for 8 years, from 52 to 60, and we had peace and prosperity and I Love Lucy, et cetera, during the 50s, and it's you know, he's got that trademark to him, which is fine. However, if he was born in Austria-Hungary, and excuse me, Austria, the Habsburg Empire. Remind me again.
Well, it's the Austria-Hungarian.
Empire. Yeah. At the time, if he's been infiltrated into the U.S., if he's in fact of a European bloodline, which I think you'll bring out later in the story, then he has no business, you know, being president of the United States, and this is fraud and criminality on an unprecedented level, as is the current situation with Barry Sotoro. The fraud of his presidency, et cetera, is unprecedented. You know, this level of criminality that we're now uncovering and exposing, you know, especially you, this is unprecedented. This is history in the making. Okay, so I just wanted to broaden off the lens so that, let's say, new listeners understand the significance of what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Did you want to pick it up from the Lonnie Roberts letter to Mamie?
And not really, but I will. No.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. Mm-hmm. I want to first reference something that was in my prior two-part article that I just referenced a few moments ago, and that was a very good broad brush explanation, by the way. For our listeners, I have no problem with anything that you said there. I had discovered the entrance, and this is repeating this issue, but this is very pertinent to the whole story. I had discovered and published this in my prior piece that Dwight David Eisenhower first arrived in the United States at Ellis Island on a ship with the U.S. military, having come from the Panama Canal Zone. Allegedly, he was doing a two-year stint there. And he very likely may have been doing a stint there. It's quite possible they were teaching him English and eliminating any kind of a foreign accent. He arrived at Ellis Island on September 27th, 1924, and it was stated that he was born in Tyler, Texas. That is significant because it's quite a distance away from Denison, for one thing, and it was a direct contradiction to the claim that he was born in Denison, Texas, and that I knew that the birth certificate was immediately a fraudulent act. The whole conspiracy to create this with using third parties. And there were no doctors involved in this. There were no witnesses to the event because there was no one who was involved in this who was actually an American. Maybe the county clerk in Grayson County and certainly the judge that issued the certificate, but it was apparent that that judge did that under duress. And so...
Let me go back just for a second again to just make it crystal clear. Dwight Eisenhower entered Ellis Island by boat in 1924.
Yes.
Was he alone or was he with his wife at the time? Was he married at the time?
With his wife and his two-year-old son.
Okay, all right.
Who they claim was born in Denver, Colorado.
Okay, right.
Mamie Eisenhower was claiming she was living with her parents, the Dowds, at 750 Lafayette Street in Denver, Colorado.
Okay.
Now, there were conflicting biographical stories about her because...
Yes, I know, yes.
I wrote about this in that piece, that the governor said she was born in Denver. Well, everyone else was saying she was born in Boone, Iowa, and I was saying she was born in Solka, Bukovina, Austria-Hungary.
Right.
Okay.
So we have at least two individuals.
Yes.
Dwight and his, you know, his wife, which he was calling Mamie, both born in Austria-Hungary.
Yes. Now, her name in Austria-Hungary was Ida Koch.
Okay.
Now, Ida, right, translated into English, is Ida. As in Ida Stover Eisenhower, the alleged mother of Dwight David Eisenhower.
Right.
Okay.
So just to get back to Ellis Island just for a minute, you have Dwight Eisenhower telling officials at Ellis Island there as he's, you know, getting off the ship or prior to getting off the ship, you know, where were you born? I was born in Tyler, Texas. You have Dwight Eisenhower reporting to Ellis Island officials that he's born in Tyler, Texas. That's the significance.
Yes, that's the Immigration and Naturalization Service, he told that to, the INS.
Okay. Was it called that at the time?
Yes.
Okay.
That was a division of the Federal Trade Commission also.
Okay, all right, that's really important to remember that.
Yes.
Eisenhower himself is saying, I was born in Tyler, Texas.
Yes.
Okay.
And the document was typewritten. Wasn't a misprint. The whole document was typewritten.
Right.
And it was a contingent of soldiers in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Army returning to the United States from the Panama Canal Zone.
Right.
Now, I determined on the basis of the Sherman Herald story that Lonnie F. Roberts, a private in the U.S. Army, embarked upon this campaign to create this birth certificate, and I didn't have any proof or any material to go on other than to find out who this guy was.
Yep.
And it so happened that I came upon a letter. You want to talk about a needle in the in the haystack and divine providence? It was intended for us all to learn of this letter that he wrote, and I'll read it to the listening audience here, especially for those that may not be on the internet and aren't seeing this on the article. Certainly, if you open up another page, if you're on bbsradio.com, just open up another page in your browser, go to directlightproductions.com, click on articles, then click on Teenage Mutant Ninja Birth Certificates, and scroll down a little bit, and you'll see this letter. It's titled at the top, Denison, Texas, Birthplace of General Dwight D. Eisenhower, September 3rd, 1952, A.D. I want to remark that I'm glad that they wrote A.D. and not B.C. Just clarification, okay? It's addressed to Mrs. Dwight D. Eisenhower, Denver, Colorado. Now, there's a pattern at the end of sentences or at the end of phrases that would not require periods to do so, which shows an extreme ignorance to American grammar and or it's a foreign habit to do this. And I've seen this in many foreign documents. But in this particular case, there are periods and commas where they shouldn't be, dangling participles, run-on sentences, and it's quite interesting because this letter is in all caps. Some are larger than others. It appears to be to have been written with a military typewriter. Dear Mrs. Eisenhower, : okay. Enclosed, please find birth certificate form partly filled out. Please finish the unanswered questions and sign affidavit A by some person that knows when General Eisenhower was born, General Eisenhower's brother, or any other person that knows a relative will be best. On affidavit B, anyone can sign that knows the general was born here in Denison, Texas, on October 14th, 1890, ... Mrs. Eisenhower, there is one or two persons here that knows when your husband was born, However, I would like to have his brother or other close relative sign where I have marked in pencil. On line 22, brother or relative signs also on affidavit A, marked with red pencil, non-relative in blue pencil. Please do get this signed and returned as soon as you can. There will be no charges for this service. If Miss Jackson were alive, I would not have had to write to you, as she was there when General Eisenhower were born. I was also born in Denison, Texas, and my folks lived in the house too. I am doing all possible to help General Ike get elected. I am putting out Eisenhower buttons, about 5,000 of them. I hope you are enjoying excellent health and happiness, and with every good wish, I am sincerely yours, Lonnie F. Roberts, Commander, Veterans Action Committee, 223 and one half West Main Street, Rooms 210, Denison, Texas. Now, there are numerous grammatical errors in this letter, and first of all, it shows that someone at least penned a letter to create a fictitious birth certificate. There's no doubt about that. And who is this guy, this Army private? Well, I went down the rabbit hole on Lonnie F. Roberts, and I couldn't find any justification for calling him a private in the U.S. Army, especially when I came up with a letter. Now, this is a part of this article, although it's not posted currently. I talk about it, and I've put a notification at the end of the article that I'm creating links within the article to go to another page on my site where people can actually see the same copy that I have of these articles. Now, this is a man who is claimed to have served in the U.S. Army and is collecting benefits at various veterans hospitals around the country, particularly in Denver, Colorado, and Dallas, Texas. And he's writing from Denison, Texas, or alleging to have written from Denison, Texas. Here's a letter to him from a Mr. Lonnie Frank, well, it's addressed to Mr. Lonnie Franklin Roberts. 2603 is the number that follows his name. General Delivery, Denison, Texas. Now, how is that to get to him without a street address? Yet the Selective Service System knew where to send this letter. And it says, "Dear Sir, due to recent changes in Selective Service regulations, it will now be necessary for you to furnish this office with a Form 42A executed and signed by your present employer. We are herewith a Form 42B, which you will please have your employer fill out, returning it to this office. If you are not working or your employer does not wish to request deferment, please furnish us with a statement to that effect. If this form is not received within the next 10 days, it will be necessary for our board to reclassify you in a class available for military service. Yours truly, A.W. Linden, Clerk, Local Board Number 1, Denison, Texas." And this is dated July 10th, 1944. So Mr. Roberts did not serve as a private in the Army at that time. He would not have been drafted except to be drafted into the Korean War, possibly. But he was writing letters from Denison, Texas, beginning in 1942. So you can't be in the Army and writing letters from Denison, Texas at the same time. Impossible. And this went on for 30 years. I've got copies of letters that he wrote to congressmen, senators, state representatives, secretaries of state, veterans, administrators, deputy administrators, Navy personnel, such as the head of the Navy Department, or the Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal, and numerous other officials, union leaders, labor organizers, you name it. It's damning information, and it shows that this guy was doing much more than just creating a birth certificate for a president. Aliases come up time and time again. And with the aliases, as one moves from one alias to the next and does enough research, you eventually come across a document that shows that at some point he began calling himself a reverend. And the connections are mind-blowing, because it reveals a conspiracy to steal public funds through the Veterans Administration, veterans benefits, Social Security benefits, insurance, real estate. Just use your imagination. And it spans 30 years, and there were some very interesting people. There were some presidents and vice presidents who were contacted by this man. And I describe it in the article as extremely or excessively flowery language being used, much like how he ended his letter, you know, with every good wish, I am sincerely yours. These are the types of closings and salutations used by these politicians. Every year, and sometimes every month or every couple of months, he had problems getting mail. That was the term he used. And I began to see that the word mail actually meant money, and that he wasn't getting money that he was expecting because of payouts on all of this identity theft that was going on. Certainly a man creating aliases for himself and connecting them to people, whether legitimate family members or not, it was just beyond belief how many people were involved in this and where it took me. As I searched for some of the people that he named or were found in Denison City records, and I want to get into a little bit of that, but as I did my research, I found major databases containing all the names that he was using and more names. And when I checked those names tracked back to him and some of the other players in this whole thing. I came to the conclusion that Dwight D. Eisenhower, who I had identified in my prior research as Johann Adolf Eisenhower, basically infiltrated the Republican Party, but secretly dealt with Democrats behind the scenes. And it was a fascist, communist, and CIA-based organization that was plotting to overthrow this country. We know this from the work that I did on the Scherf family, a.k.a. Bush, and the McCanns, a.k.a. McCain, and now Obama, Satoru, Rockefeller. We have the same story playing out here again, and we have facts here. We have letters and communications from these individuals, and they cannot deny, well, they're not, many of them aren't around anymore, but no one can deny that there was not this connection. And certainly the money laundering trail is there for us to see. We have that going on today. The whole country is facing a complete collapse of the real estate market because of this type of fraud. So I wanted to make those general statements that this individual was not just somebody who was interested in a one-shot deal helping someone reach the highest office in the land. He was a professional, and I came to the conclusion that he was an Eisenhower brother and found the trail back to Europe. So, any comments, Ken?
Well, yes. The story initiated is that Eisenhower was not a native-born American. He probably entered the country for the first time in 1924, after perhaps spending a couple of years at the Panama Canal perhaps, as you suggested, improving English and so forth, becoming acclimated to Army routine. I have to presume that his record, which I think you've already wrote about, his record of having attended West Point, etc., was fabricated. Is that what you're thinking?
Yes, I analyzed the photographs ad nauseum in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Eisenhower's piece.
Right.
And they're all compilations. They're faked photographs.
Right.
Okay. So.
Okay. So his often mentioned, rise to fame, as it were, did not begin as a at West Point, as we're led to believe.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So now, in addition, though, to assisting Eisenhower, Lonnie Roberts, has multiple aliases, including the name Lonnie Roberts, because you've come to the conclusion that this man is actually Eisenhower's brother.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So he has another birth name, and it's not Lonnie Roberts. But this individual himself is a career criminal in that he's involved in multiple scams in order to make money. And among his other scams was applying for veteran benefits using various aliases of his own making, and using the post office drop locations, I guess, in the Denison area as his address. And he's being sent money under various names, and apparently, you know, either cashing the checks or getting the checks, you know. In other words, he's gaining financially from collecting bonus veterans benefits, which of course he wasn't entitled to, because apparently he was never actually in the military. He just pretended that he was in writing, and he apparently had a long career in this sort of criminal enterprises, including money laundering events and real estate fraud events, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really it's the story begins with Eisenhower, and but the fact that Eisenhower and his wife Mamie, which is not her true birth name, but are both born in Europe, that this guy, along with his brother, you know, came into the country, and he's an actor, and he's pretending to be, I'm talking about Lonnie Roberts now, many different individuals in a long career, and that he has had two aliases that use the same name, Lonnie F. Roberts, but one of them had a reported birth and date death, which is 11 years distance from the other, but mm-hmm. they both supposedly died at the age of 78.
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying in the case of the first alias of Lonnie Roberts is that correct me if I'm wrong, 1989, the death of the first one?
Yes.
Okay.
They claim he died in 1989, but the second one shows up in Amarillo, Texas. And,
right.
And these are overlapping. You see, for the listeners out there, it's kind of confusing. But you mm-hmm. have to understand, this isn't a real person by his name. He's using this name in various places. He's associating himself with various names in the families, which happen to match when you start comparing all the different aliases and the alleged names of the children. Because when you create an alias and then you get that alias registered in the system as a fictitious person, they can go on through infinity collecting benefits.
That's the scam, right? They're collecting benefits using created alias names and identities. They're collecting multiple benefits and using those names for other acts of fraud involving money laundering and real estate transactions, I suppose.
Yeah, that's just a few of them. You know, Social Security benefits is another aspect. Insurance.
Right.
Setting up bogus businesses. Now, I found something interesting and more current research in Denison reveals that the Denison City Directory from 1952 had these aliases and phony addresses, phony businesses. Those businesses did not exist except in the city directory. And one would ask, why put that in there? Well, there were incoming spies. You see, I began to see that Eisenhower's alleged birth home was really a safe house for foreign spies. And Obama...
Right. Let me clarify. The birth home in Denison, the claimed birth home in Denison, Texas, was actually a clearinghouse for incoming spies, a safe house, as you say.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And all the officials who wrote him used the fictitious addresses and the mailing, return mail, with exception of a few post office boxes that appeared later on, some years later, but always using the fictitious addresses. These places do not exist today, and they didn't exist in 1952, and they didn't exist before that. So why use those addresses? Well, it's obvious that if you're running a scam, you don't want to be trackable. So you create an address that no one knows. They were using the post office as the drop-off point. And that and there is mail from the Postmaster General in various areas of the country, including Washington, D.C. These people are intercepting, when I say these people, these senators and congressmen are on Lonnie Roberts' behalf, making sure that mail gets put into these fictitious addresses. As he was in Denver on one occasion, he was complaining about not receiving his veterans benefit, a check for $120. And there was a report when they looked into it that he went AWOL from the Fitzsimmons Hospital in Denver and that he had cashed the check already, you see. And his forthcoming mail was going to be arriving in Dallas. So he's getting mail in Denison. He's getting mail in Sherman. He's getting mail in Dallas, Amarillo, and other places. Trust me on that. It's you've got to read all this research because I gradually go through this pattern. I reveal the aliases, the phony addresses, the phony businesses, all the people with whom he corresponded, and then I break down the reality of the aliases and their addresses and who these people are tied to because it reveals the whole scheme, you see, when one does that. So, I was able at one point even to determine that Lonnie Roberts was the mayor of Denison when Eisenhower ran for the presidency. He's using the name Lonnie Roberts in the story, but his name as the mayor of Denison was A.C. Casey. He would have been the one to put the bogus information in the city directory, which was a billboard for all these incoming spies. They were instructed on how to get in touch with him, and he advertised himself doing birth certificates, income taxes. He was a notary, and he performed marriages. You see, and that was the basis for all of these scams. So he would give the incoming spies phony names, phony documentation, even allege that he was performing marriages. And it was advertised as a reverend. He was advertised in the city directory in 1952. In 1953, he was finished being the mayor. So from what I can tell, he was only the mayor of the town for about a year. But it was while Eisenhower ran for the presidency. And he had established all of these high-level connections with politicians in Texas, California, some of whom, by the way, I went down the rabbit hole on them and tracked them coming from Europe as well. This W. Lee O'Daniel, for instance, is alleged to have been born in Ohio. That's a lie. That man came in on a ship from Fiume, which was a principality next to Italy. And it was part of the Austria-Hungarian Empire. So they sent all the operatives from Europe over here to infiltrate our government and get them in political office. Any comments you want to make?
Well, that's you said a very important point there. We've from time to time when we've discussed this aspect of the intrigues of those who are trying to destroy this country, we use the word infiltrators often, both with the conventional spelling as well as the altered spelling that you had suggested, infiltrators, to emphasize the fact that they are truly agents of foreign nationalities who are being directed and manipulated by the elite powers we refer to, to ensconce themselves into positions of very high authority in this country. So essentially they're at the helm of, you know, leading this country into a destructive course. It becomes pretty obvious from the 20th century forward. Teddy Roosevelt, for instance, despite all the bluster, was part of this elite group who was setting the stage for the planned destruction of this country. Woodrow Wilson certainly was a tool. He said at a later point that he regretted this and that, but the fact is that whether he was knowingly or unknowingly manipulated, he was used by these people. And the 30s saw FDR, which, you know, most people, in at least you know, of a Democrat persuasion, revere as one of the greatest presidents we ever had. And if you really find out how many how much scaffolding he, through his administration, erected to assist the, you know, in building the Trojan horse to destroy this country from within, he played a very major role during his administration. Despite all the wonderful speeches about you have nothing to fear but fear itself and all those ringing phrases, he nevertheless was a member of this elite group, and he's responsible for the Masonic symbolism placed on the dollar bills, and he's responsible for the financial bankruptcy of this country in 1933, which still is the case. I mean, this paved the way for a great deal of, let's say, fraud within the legal system that most Americans now are subjected to. They are only beginning now to understand that, you know, the legal system is dominated completely in control, or if you will, or under the auspices of the Uniform Commercial Code, the UCC. What the heck does the Uniform Commercial Code have to do with common law of this land? Nothing. But it's the vehicle in which these manipulators, working through Roosevelt, well, first, you know, 1913, the Jekyll Island deal, creation of the Federal Reserve System,
yeah,
followed by the 1933 bankruptcy, set the stage for this whole deal that all of us are being imposed upon, in which, you know, there's no mention of common law. When you go into a court of law today, you're being judged. Everything is being judged under the UCC, and you're being charged under this fictitious nomenclature known as a straw man. They don't tell you that, But now we know, you know, they're all capital names whenever the government subpoenas you to go to court or for anything else to do with the government. Your name is in all capital letters. Why? Because they're not addressing the flesh and blood you. They're addressing this fiction, which was set into motion in 1933, called the straw man. And we're all being victimized and enslaved by this system. Not only here, it's happening in other parts of the world. So, you know, these guys are frauds. These presidents who are essentially enabling this takeover and takedown agenda of, you know, destroying this country from within. And we have to recognize. And today what kills me, we're bringing up this, you know, historical bombshell here. This story that you're uncovering is earth-shaking, really. It's historical implications are enormous once enough people with enough brains realize the significance of what you've turned up here. But here we have Obama in virtually, a sitting usurper in the office now. That's paralleling in the sense that you know, Eisenhower was not an American serving as the president of this country.
And a lot of people know it now, where back in Eisenhower's day, if anyone knew it, it got quashed.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that, you know, we didn't have the ability of the internet. We just had what we're being fed by, you know, newspapers. All the newspapers have been controlled in this country since the beginning of the 20th century. The Zionist group openly boasted that if you read the protocols of the elders, learned elders of Zion, which is essentially the meetings, the minutes of a series of meetings that took place in a Congress, an 1897 Congress headed up by Theodore Herzl, who essentially is the father of the so-called Zionist movement. They openly boast at these meetings, and it was recorded in these passages, which are called protocols, but again, this is a 19th century word. It really refers to the minutes of meetings. And I was just reviewing the protocols a few days ago. I read them originally 7 or 8 or 9 years ago, but I just began to reread them to reabsorb the information, and it's amazing how accurate these protocols are in foretelling.
It's a roadmap. It's a script.
It's a roadmap, and this meetings took place in 1897. So they're talking about events that if you could be reading today's newspaper, and it's such an accurate reflection of exactly the script. You know, the traitors in government have been following. So I mean, it's very significant what you're turning up here.
Now, for our listening audience, Ken, I want to play the farewell speech that occurred on January 17th of 1961. This is Eisenhower, just three days before he turned over the presidency to JFK.
Right.
And people credit him for alerting us to the military-industrial complex, but I want to make a point here, and I want to discuss something that ties all this together after we listen to this. His original script, as alluded to by Matilda O'Donnell McElroy, whose notes were put in a book called Alien Interview. And in this book, she had it in her notes that the original description of this warning, of this military-industrial complex, was called the Congressional Military-Industrial Complex, and he removed that word to placate his co-conspirators. And we have the proof of who some of those people were. We don't have all the communications, but we have envelopes and letters from several of them. In fact, there were about 39 different documents that support the charge that I'm making here. And this is Eisenhower, in his own words, I want to really clarify what this is, what is occurring after we listen to this.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed 4 major wars among great nations. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Now, I want to comment, Ken, and ladies and gentlemen, that that wasn't a warning to the American people. That was an affirmation to his handlers, to his taskmasters. In 2 words, mission accomplished. He spoke in riddles, and knowing what I know, knowing what you know, after you have read this article, you will understand that this is something, a plot that began in 1942. Now, coincidentally, in 1942, a man who served at the UN Depot No. 8 at Newark Airport and at another base in Great Falls, Montana, originally called Gore Field, and the name Gore, I doubt, was named after a farmer, as alleged, but probably a relative of a recent vice president who's going around telling everyone that the world is dying from global warming. I think the world is dying from corruption, actually. But Malmstrom Air Force Base became the name of the base at Great Falls, Montana. And then a third base at Fairbanks, Alaska, where we were supplying the Soviet Union all the munitions and hardware and planes and even treasury bills, including atomic secrets given to the Soviets by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And in this general time frame that this operation began, the Soviets were coming here, and I'm sure Nazis as well, in droves. And I wrote about this in my Three Stooges Go to Washington piece. The Dunhams were part of this very same ring and had gone to Denison, Texas. I identified many other participants who had gone there. So we know that this operation was a covert international spy ring running out of the state of Texas. Is it a coincidence that the Bush dynasty set up their operation in Texas as well? Is it a coincidence that the President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, was assassinated in Dallas, Texas, and that most of the people that we're talking about here tonight and on other shows where we've revealed those plots all had something to do with this very topic we're talking about. Major General George Racy Jordan, in his diaries, recounted all of these goings on in regard to us paying the way under the Lend-Lease program initiated by the United Nations on January 1st, 1942, when the United States joined the UN, unlike what we were taught in school, that occurred on October 24th, 1945. In addition to that, we have the McCarthy hearings, several years of investigations on the communist infiltration of our government. Senator Joseph McCarthy knew exactly what he was talking about. And this research that I have done, independent of that, dovetails dead on with what the Senate hearings were all about. And that was swept under the rug. Racy's comments and documentation of what had occurred were swept under the rug. And even T.H. Teton's letter to Eisenhower, which is included in my article, and the reference to his book, which he also gave to Eisenhower, Germany Plots with the Kremlin, reveals that all of this was covered up. It was intended to cover it up because our government had been infiltrated with the cooperation of our elected officials. In the nutshell, that is a summary of what this is about. I encourage you to go to my website, directlightproductions.com, click on articles, then click on Teenage Mutant Ninja Birth Certificates and read it for yourself. And I will have in the very short future all of the communications between these criminals posted for you to read yourself. Don't believe me, read it for yourself. I'm sure you'll come to the same conclusion. Ken, I had to say that, and I want you to comment now.
Well, it's a huge story, and we've essentially, in this hour show, broached the first opening segment of the story. There's a great deal more that there wasn't time to get into. It's really a huge investigative expose. As I mentioned, for ease of reading, I prefer to print something out. I printed out the text only, none of the graphics with the letters, and that easily went to 45, 48 pages. So there's a lot of reading here. And beyond that, to really absorb, because there's so many names, there's so much detail, you've got to read it more than once. Typically, your articles, I read more than once because it's very dense, data-wise, it's very dense
detailed.
Detailed information. In order to remember it all, I can't get it all in the first time around. So it's with rereading that, the story sinks in more clearly. And you've really done a lot of work here. And to reiterate, you've spent months on this. This is not a weekend project, at least 6 months, perhaps more.
Yeah, the entirety of the work that I've done so far is about 7 months of actual work.
Yes.
And research and connecting this together.
Yeah.
I traced this individual, Lonnie Roberts, to the name A.C. Casey, that's a name he used when he entered the country. But he ended his criminal career, using the name Gene Seeley. He couldn't get away from using his birth name, Eugene.
Right.
You see? And it's just, it's remarkable how all this came out of one single newspaper article.
Yep. That is remarkable how that one article was the seed which produced this string of leads.
Yes.
And flowered into this story.
You know, maybe on an upcoming show, you and I can discuss this some more, because there were many anomalies at the Eisenhower birthplace, and I put quotes around that, in Denison.
Yes.
For instance, there's a photo of his passport, and it says place of birth, Tyler, Texas. Right there in Denison.
Right there, right. It's just amazing. It's amazing. And one other quick caveat. Of course, Eisenhower himself in 1924 told the immigration people, I was born in Tyler, Texas. Tyler, Texas is 200 and some odd miles away from Denison. Is that what you told me?
Oh, it's roughly 120 miles on the old route US 69. The current highway that heads southwest through Dallas-Fort Worth and then southeast towards Tyler is 164 miles.
Right. So it's not like, the towns are right next to each other and it was just, a secondary name. We're talking about two different towns that are 120 miles apart. I mean, if you're born in Los Angeles, you don't tell someone, I was born in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too distant, to make a mistake. And obviously, he was an adult at the time, so that should send up red flags. And there was another instance in which somebody asked Dwight, whether it was before the election or after, but asked him about his birthplace, and what was his response to that reporter?
This was a lady described as Jenny Jackson. Now, that's the Miss Jackson that Lonnie Roberts referred to. My research came up with Jenny Jackson, a gospel singer.
Yes.
And it was sometime after I had made that discovery that I read an East Texas Historical Society biography, if you could call it that, which spun a story that this Jenny Jackson wrote to Eisenhower, asked him where he was born, and he said he didn't know. And he directed her to his mother.
Yes.
She would know. And then the claim that he came into this land, in Denison, Texas. Mm-hmm. Well, she didn't exist. I proved that in my prior research, that was a lie. That was a total fiction. There were no birth records or anything. It was all another Kansas story. We had another Wizard of Oz story.
Yeah.
They did that to us with the short-legged Mac Daddy very recently.
Yes.
The same thing. But they have their money laundering ring, not just in Texas. They have it in Oklahoma and Kansas and Utah. In fact, the major database that connects with this and the genealogy databases is the Mormon Church.
Right.
Okay. And there is a church connection with the Presbyterians. This is all in my article. And the Methodists as well. Now, I'm not attacking religions, but certainly those that run these organizations are doing this kind of work behind the scenes. You've got to come to your own conclusions on that. It's, this is nothing but organized crime.
Right.
And it's infiltration.
Right. So these genealogical organizations are really vehicles which are being used by frauds and fraudsters and scammers like so-called Lonnie Roberts, in order to enable them to do this identity impersonation theft and use these bogus identities as ways of getting money out of the U.S. taxpayer.
Yes.
Through fraud.
Now, there was a name that came up in the McCarthy hearings that rung very loudly, and actually it was the same frequency as a name I came up with via the information I learned is being taught at the Eisenhower birthplace home tour, and that is that there was a Dr. Savage who was his landlord. I suppose Dr. Savage delivered the baby. Well, there were four brothers that were brought out in the McCarthy hearing by the name of Savage. Three of them were in Pittsburgh, were notorious organized crime figures, and the fourth brother was in New York. and their last name was Savage. So the connection, and they were being grilled in regard to their communist ties.
Right.
And all the witnesses were being grilled over these four. Theodore, Harry, Abraham, and Nathan Savage. There were no Savages. The only Dr. Savage of that time period that I could come up with graduated from high school, actually Brigham Young Academy High School in Salt Lake City. There's another connection to the Mormons.
Yep.
And that was Nephi H. Savage. Went on to become the state director of epidemiology for the state of Wyoming. He was only a teenager at the time that Eisenhower was born. He wouldn't have been the landlord. And the other Dr. Savage, who ended up eventually working in the Texas Panhandle some years later, was only 9 years old, hardly qualifying for that position in 1890. The architect they name was a, I'm trying to think of the last name now, a man by the name of Noah, and I'm forgetting his last name, pardon me, but Lindsay, Noah Lindsay. Noah Lindsay died in 1879, so he couldn't have built a house that was built in the 1880s.
Right.
There is another architect's name, and I have the photograph of the plaque on the property crediting Joseph R. Peli. To the best of my research abilities, neither of these two men existed. These names are more aliases.
So, you're referring to the house in Denison, Texas.
Yes.
The government claims is the birthplace of Dwight Eisenhower.
That house was bought by the city of Denison in 1946. What did they know was coming?
Right.
6 years before Eisenhower was elected. What did they know, you see?
Right.
So it becomes quite clear that there is a pattern, and it's established by the lies that were told historically. And the proof that's out there, if one digs enough, one can find it. Mm-hmm. The man who replaced W. Lee O'Daniel in the Senate, took his Senate seat, was Lyndon Baines Johnson, and he was deep in this corruption.
Yep.
And he's notoriously described as having been a shady character anyway.
Yes.
You know, if it sounds like we're attacking politicians, then that's how it sounds. I'm just stating the facts. It's obvious that he bent over backwards for years from a period of 1952 through 1950 to 1972. This man was constantly helping Lonnie F. Roberts resolve his mail problems.
Yes.
Helping him get a Navy pin for an alleged brother, which was just another alias.
Yes.
We have one Lonnie Roberts dying as having been a U.S. Army veteran, the other one a U.S. Naval veteran.
Yes.
And neither story was true. Three of his aliases were reverends.
Right.
And just a multiplicity of aliases attached. Wives, children, grandchildren. None of it true.
Yes.
And if it was, he was a bigamist. Or worse, a polygamist.
Mm-hmm.
But that's neither here nor there. The whole idea is this has been, these methods have been used to bilk probably billions and billions of dollars from unsuspecting Americans.
Yep.
Who think that, you know, we're the home of the brave and the land of the free.
Yes, right. It's too bad that, you know, we find these matters out decades after these people have passed on. The relevance is, however, though, to the current usurper. We have a current fraud of the same caliber we're referring to in the Eisenhower story, who's certainly doing far more damage to the country than, you know, Eisenhower ever did. And you know, I personally don't feel any, let's say, animosity towards Eisenhower. I think he did a competent job during World War II. And he certainly didn't, you know, harm the country per se during his tenure. Not much was done. And unfortunately, the highway systems, which have destroyed many big cities in America because that highway construction work went full tilt during the 50s, during his time. So a lot of what could have been today stable, prosperous cities became ghettoized as a result of putting highways, you know, tearing up neighborhoods that were built, you know, in the late 19th century, early 20th century, tearing them up so you can put an elevated highway right through. That has ghettoized hundreds, mm-hmm. if not thousands, of cities across this country. Yeah. I mean, I've seen it in the city that, you know, I was raised in, and it's true throughout the country. It's terrible how that whole highway system going right through major cities has done a tremendous amount of damage to the quality and the fabric of American urban life.
Yes. Well, Ken, we're out of time. I want to close with the final paragraph of my piece.
Okay.
And just as an underscore to what we've discussed tonight, and I want to encourage folks to read it for themselves. I said, the hero presented to us in innumerable compiled photographs was pawned to us in one photo as having stood at a proportional height of 8'3". No, Dwight D. Eisenhower was no hero, nor was he any giant of a man. He was little more than a common spy, an infiltrator, and a mental midget. The God he trusted existed only on the back of a dollar bill. That same God has again been exposed for the illusion that it was, is, and always, and will always be. You know, he was credited with putting "In God We Trust" on the back of our money. And he's certainly belied the meaning of that in many of his actions. There's a lot that we could go into. We'll have to do it on another night. I want to thank you for coming on Evident Footprints tonight on such short notice, and look forward to your next visit in the month of May.
Right, John, thanks.
Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. Ken's website is educate-yourself.org. You owe it to yourself to go there. There's a lot of great research there, years worth of research, and pay him a visit there. You won't regret it. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and BlogTalkRadio.com. Also, I want to thank at BBS Radio, Don Newsom for doing the sound tonight, as well as Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be Drew Malone Raines III. I want to give a special shout-out to the folks with Project Alliance, and I understand Sylvia has been listening to the show quite a bit. So hello, Sylvia and Jill, and want to thank all the listening audience for tuning in. I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.